Hospital doesn't release any patients until noon, which means we can expect them here about 12:01, as they're both as anxious to get you home as I am. So is the cat, for that matter.
Not as anxious as me. I love you, Grandpa.
Oh. Well, I love you too, Andy. You know, I'm heartened to hear you say it. I thought maybe we had crossed that threshold that would make you too old to say it.
I won't be ever, I promise.
Well, you might. Not that there's anything wrong if you do. Most boys do. I did. But let's make a pact, no matter how old we grow.
We can say it if we feel like it.
When we feel the emotion. How's the Christmas song go? These wonderful things are the things we remember all through our lives.
Grandpa, I'm always going to remember you read me this story. Will you read it to me again?
No, I don't think so. We'll move on to something new. How about that? But I have decided this. I'm going to make sure this manuscript gets saved so you can read it to your grandson or granddaughter someday. You may be a good storyteller, too. You know, I like how you've been handling the sound effects. Now then, where were we? Oh, yes, last time we left off, we were dealing with a sound effect, weren't we?
Ping.
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 When ping. Andy Mouse...
Ping. Ping.
Ping.
Ping.
When Andy Mouse heard that pin drop, he froze. He knew immediately what the sound was telling him. From the cellar steps, he looked across and in the dim light saw the same sort of stalk he had seen earlier, rising up above the end of the countertop, except this time it was growing up right off the countertop itself, like one of those charcoal snakes you see on the 4th of July. The ones that, when we light them on fire, belch smoke and unspool as they turn into improbably long, blackened and crispy cheese doodles made out of soot, appearing to grow up out of one little spot. The serpent across the way looks a lot like that. And now it's looking over here, flicking with its tongue like radar and picking the vibrations out of the air that allow it to zero in on the little white mouse ascending the last cellar stair. With a crack of its whip, the serpent is off, running roughshod over the gooey remains of the dough mouse it had previously spit out. Oh, run for your life, Andy, run! The sliding tummy is coming after you! This story will get gory if you don't get a move. Leaping the final step to the landing, Andy scoots to the door and plunges beneath it, entering the vaulted space of the nave. But now he's stuck. Which way to go? Where to hide? He doesn't know. He can't decide. Never mind. Pick a direction. Any will do. Impulsively, he starts running along beneath a pew. Not exactly the wisest thing to do. But when he suddenly changes his mind and decides he wants to head for the lair, oh, too late! Andy's panicked. He stops. He shouldn't have. For now the serpent intercepting his thoughts has moved to cut him off. Moving towards the center of the floor, where it can begin the process of herding him, pressuring him backwards towards the rear of the church. Andy's confused. What should I do? The serpent knows, and with a mathematical cunning, divides the floor space up into squares of tic-tac-toe, then craftily moves to occupy the center square. The advantage there, it keeps the little mouse pinned along the baseboard or moving towards the back of the church. He tries faking left. He tries faking right. But every time he alters course, it only seems to make matters worse. For an instant, he's thinking of taking refuge behind the baptismal font, but thinks again, no, better not. He knows enough to stay shy of corners, which means his only choice left is the foyer, whose floor actually is laid out in the form of tic-tac-toe. A grid of tiles, raised and fire-glazed. But if he tries to play that game in here, it will surely end in his demise. For an instant, he thinks of climbing the walls, which, after all, are just like the outside, boulders glued with mortar. But he intuits if he tries, the serpent will merely rush up and pluck him off before he can gain enough height to be out of its reach. Which means... His only remaining option is to duck back under the door leading to the spiral staircase. Squeezing under, Andy, who's slimmer, has little trouble to enter, but the snake, being thicker when it comes his turn to enter, has to flatten itself and compress its skeleton to transit itself over the sill. The air inside is laden with chill, but neither pursuer nor pursued are concerned about that now. Andy is merely grateful he's been given a head start, but to do what with? What's he going to accomplish? Attempt the feat he's already acknowledged is impossible for a mouse to attempt? 40 standing 7-inch high jumps in a row? But that is exactly what it's going to take for him to make his way up this curving staircase. Impossible for a mouse. There's no time to think about that now. Ask not what can't be done. He crouches and springs, and so he's begun. He jumps, and jumping manages to snag the lip of the first step and haul himself up. Then immediately he hops up and does the same thing. Line up, regroup, repeat the move, jump! Sometimes he misses and has to repeat, but still in 5 minutes he has made significant progress and gained significant altitude, conquering the stairs, though they're coming at a slower pace. His legs are growing tired, and the adrenaline that's been pumping to keep him in the jumping is nearly depleted. He has no choice but to stop.
I've got to, at least for a minute, a short pause.
He uses it to check on the progress of his relentless pursuer, who is not even bothering to use the stairs. Instead, the serpent has sidled up a stanchion to the steel railing. From there, it wraps its length several times around, begins effortlessly, corkscrewing its way up the stairs, like a living Archimedes screw, or like the red stripe on a barber's pole appears to do, as it revolves outside a barber shop. Desperate and re-energized to find another way out, he tries to think himself taller. Standing on his hind feet, he lifts his chin, looks up, and wonders, how can he possibly make any more jumps? Looking right, he registers another option. The stone wall itself.
If I get back and really take off, I think I can make it to the boulders in the wall. From there, it should be a simpler climb. Much like climbing the same boulders from the outside. Same stones, same mortar after all.
Yes, but not the same angle. For the curving wall slants inward a little as it rises. Not a lot. Ever so slightly, but still it was going to make the climbing of it a little like climbing up a ladder from its underside as it leans against a house. Another punishing challenge for this set-upon mouse. He backed up for a good start. He ran. He leaped. And sailing across the gap with so much speed, he nearly bounces off the wall when he reaches it. But luckily, he manages to grab on, but barely. Looking ahead at what's coming up, Andy distraughtly realizes that no sooner has he skirted the obstacle of the stairs than another obstacle has presented itself, the fast approaching fact of the tower's second floor, which is to say, the wooden beams and rough-hewn boards that form the layer and barrier that will soon prevent him from climbing any higher by means of the wall. He will have to return to the staircase and keep on with the jumps. No big whoop, since the wall and staircase have nearly grown together in their ascent. That's not Andy's problem. The problem is the leaps themselves. He has no more oomph for any more jumps, and major doubts if he tries it now, his legs won't be able to lift him a quarter inch. In desperation, he roams to the inside of the stair to see what possibilities might exist there, and sees a braided rope hanging down through space, and wonders,
I wonder if I get back and run, can I reach it with a horizontal jump? If I can reach it, can I climb it? I don't know, I've never climbed a rope before. But Uncle Bobo used to brag about having done it all the time to get aboard ships for Caribbean cruises. Well, I suppose if he can do it, I can. if I can reach it.
Giving it all his gas, he streaks across the trapezoid step and does his best flying squirrel imitation. He leaps, traveling outwards as well as downwards, several feet before he finally intersects the rope and clings to it. However, once aboard, discovers that climbing upwards is a cinch.
This is much easier compared to the columns of wax and slippery brass candlesticks I've had to climb in the past.
Going up, he passes between the wooden beams and then through the round hole in the ceiling through which the rope passes. Inside the second floor, he flings himself off and lands hard on the floorboards, but doesn't spring up. Reason why? He's exhausted, that's why. Not just tuckered, but drained of every ounce of strength he had ever had. Best he can manage now is to drag himself away from the direction the snake will soon be showing up. By the east-facing vent, he collapses, totally spent. Meanwhile,
attention commuters, now pulling into St. Andrews Tower Station. The Black Racer Limited on Track 1. Please meet your party at Track 1. The Limited is looking for you.
Triumphantly, the serpentine beast arrives and slides down from its monorail perch. We watch it slide and want to shout, "Get up and run, Andy, run! Save yourself! Don't give up!" But what good will it do? He is beyond anyone's help. He is beyond hope. For him now, the whole story's been written. Dreamily, he gazes up at the gaps between the slats and the louvered vent and thinks,
What an easy avenue of escape that would have made. Too bad about the chicken wire mesh that's covering it to keep out the bats. And me in, I'm afraid, with a diameter mesh too small to fit. Oh, well, then this is it.
Poor orphaned Andy, feeling sorry for himself, thinks he's a big failure.
Gosh, what a big fiasco. What a big mistake. What's the point of surviving a snowy owl if you're just going to be eaten by a snake?
He lay there, knowing his grim reaper must be slithering ever nearer. But he didn't care. And he hoped he might not be thought a coward for choosing not to look. You know what they say about that moment when you're about to die? Your whole life flashes before you and flickers right before your eyes. For Andy, it was like seeing pages of newsprint blowing by on the wind and hung up for an instant on a fence or a bramble or a lamppost. The first headline that read, "Mouse mishap triggers chaos at wedding ceremony. Bride last seen fleeing the county." Another showed a photo of the little flower girl with her gauze-bandaged lower lip. Another headline read, "Mouse infestation at St. Andrews by the sea prompts church to hire cat." Then followed two photos, a before and an after, showing the pirate cat with and without his wooden leg. A supplement showed the headstrong dog, Mountain, towing his master by the leash. Then, in swifter and sweeter fashion, came the memories of the candlelit parties in the manger in the lair. He and his grandfather and the dancing figurines. Then he thought fondly of the afternoon spent gazing out from his favorite dragon spout lookout, overlooking the quintessential Cape Cod scene. But mostly, what he cherished most were the common memories of house and home in the lair and the many happy times he had growing up there, in the company of his wise old grandfather and his beloved mom and dad. Suddenly, he feels the air from a pair of sniffing nostrils ruffling the fur up his back.
I don't need to look. I know how these executions go. I've witnessed two. Zeke and Deke both being consumed. Now I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Then Andy realized,
I guess I'm being forced to look anyway, as the creature's lengthening shadow is being thrown across me in the floor.
And Andy thought,
Why am I abandoned? Why am I lying helpless at the foot of this beast? That is, if this beast had any feet to lie helpless to. Wait a minute. Did I just say lengthening shadow?
He feels a stirring of hope, but then it dawns on him.
Oh, it's just dawn coming on, and coming on strong. That's all.
Sunbeams are pouring through the louvered vent, painting horizontal stripes of sunlight across every surface in the room, especially that shiny thing in the background that is giving off the technicolor glow, mostly in hues of yellow and rose. That reflective thing flinging sunbeams. Andy wants to look some more, but he can't, even if he wanted to. The light is too bright and it hurts his eyes. And then, as expected, the final shoe does drop. But when it does, it doesn't sound like a shoe. It doesn't land with a plop. Instead, it lands with a sound like this. Bong,
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 bong.
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 Bong. Bong. Over Andy's head, the enormous cupped brass dome swings and upends, slashing through the air repeatedly. It really is a guillotine to some degree, and like the daring young acrobat on the flying trapeze, it traces a looping arc, back and forth in a horseshoe curve, powered by nothing but itself, or so it appears, but in reality powered by a combination of strong back, strong arms, and strong shoulders of the bell puller below, whose pulls on the rattling rope are what's keeping up the mad, romping din. Oh, that great cathedral bell, whose magnificent voice is somewhere between a peal and a gong, and if likened to words of a popular song, its lyrics would be these. Bong,
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 bong.
Cataracts of sound drench over Andy. It is not an unhappy feeling at all. The ringling, tingling, and jingling waves pass through him, turning him into a living joy buzzer. It was like being awakened by the biggest alarm clock God ever made. Bong, 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 bong. The great reverberating bell, which has made its long voyage all the way up from the bottom of the Atlantic, is now sending forth its rich peals in plangent waves that rush out to greet the incoming rollers and deliver its message to the ears of every hearer in the village of Safe Harbor. And the message is this. Awake, awake, it's Christmas Day, a babe is born in the manger. So now you understand why the great bell remains silent during its earlier installation. Its investiture was being saved for this special occasion. Bong, bong. One really cannot get over how majestic is its sound. It's the sort of ringing that not even the most cynical or jaded puppet ruler king could ever belittle as a ping. Unless, of course, he considered a thunderclap to be the same thing. Now, you may ask, what about the snake, who, of course, is partaking of the same fate as Andy? Well, yes, but not exactly. Remember what I said about the serpent's forked tongue? And my extolling how sensitive it is to the softest and most minute vibrating? Okay, now, imagine the kind of toll this tolling must be taking on a creature so delicately constituted. Note, too, though the creature has ears, we see it lacks a set of paws to cover them with when the racket gets too loud. Which is exactly what the racket is doing now! Bong! Bong! You want to know, was the serpent moving? Oh, yes, it was moving. Query, at what point does vibration turn into levitation? For like a hovercraft hovering out of control, the paralyzed serpent now drifts,
helplessly towards the open hole, sails right past its rim where it ceases to levitate and drops like a stone, engendering an immediate cessation of hauls on the rope and eliciting just the sort of reaction you might have expected amongst the assembled crowd below. Meanwhile, under the dome, the clapper hangs still, but the excited atoms in the mass of the bell continue to swarm and sing like angels, accompanied by a low note, like a whole group of Tibetan monks, all chanting, and on the ringing goes, as if it were going to last the whole day long, as if the whole day long were to be composed of dawn,
dawn.
At last, the great bells ring off, signs off, and quits. But the same ringing continues in Andy's ears, if anything, growing louder a bit. He tries to get up and run, but he can barely stand. It's like he's punch drunk. And why shouldn't he be? His muscles feel like he's just been pummeled. But in the little white mouse, the will for survival remains strong, as does his desire to live. So with blurred and jangled vision, he staggers once more to his feet, and with renewed determination makes a second effort to flee, hoping to avoid the same pitfall as the snake, i.e., the pit. But the sound waves have addled his brains more than a bit, and the loud ringing in his ears has completely overthrown his sense of balance. He's like one of those revelers at backyard parties who dizzily circle baseball bats with their foreheads and then try to run a straight line. Result is, they zoom off on the diagonal every time, which is exactly what Andy did. He ran directly at the hole and fell in. And that's where we'll stop for today.
Oh, Grandpa, just read a little more,
nope,
please.
I can't.
Grandpa, just a little more.
We're getting into
more.
Christmas Day.
Please.
And that's reserved for tomorrow.
Please.
It's only fitting. Oh, besides, look out. It's snowing out. Huh? Isn't that pretty? Yeah. I want to get home before the snow plows get Romy.
Watch out for Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah. I'll watch out for Santa
Don't
Claus.
Hit his reindeer.
If I see any reindeer crossings, I will treat them as railroad crossings. How about that? You got some good sleep now. You may as well. You can't get up and run to see what's under the tree.
Don't let Mom forget to hang up my stocking.
Oh, she's not likely to.
And have Grandma put out some cookies and milk.
Oh, yeah, she will. She may try to eat them herself, but I'll guard to make sure she doesn't.
And who's gonna guard you?
Well, I don't need guarding.
Grandma said someone's been eating all the candy canes off the tree.
Oh, no,
it was either elves or maybe rats.
Good night, Andy.
Good night,
Merry
Grandpa.
Christmas. Love you.
Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas!